I'll start off like I always do, and I'll say, turn with me, if you will, to where this week's Torah portion begins. Technically, it's the book of Numbers, Bamidbar, chapter 25, starting in verse 10. But what we're going to do is actually remind ourselves of the cliffhanger where we left off last week. But I will read the first verse of the actual portion, which says, and Yehoah spoke to Moshe, and here's what he said. Then comes the word for which the parsha is named. It's a proper noun. In the English, it's Phinehas, but of course, in Hebrew, it's Pinchas. The son of Eleazar, son of Aaron the priest, has turned away my wrath from the B'nai Israel, and that he was very zealous, kanah, for my sake among them, so that I did not end up consuming the B'nai Israel in my, literally, my own kanah, jealousy. So therefore I say, behold, I give unto him my covenant of shalom. And interestingly, this is one of the jots and tittles in the scriptures, where the vav that is in the actual Torah scroll is called a broken vav. It only appears in this one place. It literally has a split in it, and it's the covenant of peace thing. There is a at least one of many teachings. What is this reference to? Vav, remember, has a number associated with it, which is 6, which is the number of man. It also has the meaning and the pictographic representation of a nail. And the fact that it's a broken nail or a broken man, I guess you could kind of see that there's an obvious reference there anyway, especially when it comes to covenant of peace or shalom or prince of shalom, okay? In any case, what I want to do is pause at this point, because this is arguably an enigmatic, maybe to put it mildly, Torah portion, one of the most so in Scripture, because here is a fellow who does something which looks like anger. A lot of the sages, and I tend to think this is true, will suggest it's not, that it's not really anger or wrath, although it is in fact wrath that is turned away by his action. But Pinchas commits a murder. He murders somebody in, maybe you could say hot blood, but he not only runs one of them through, he runs both of them through. We're going to get their names in just a second, because their names are preserved for us in Scripture. They were committing an act that was literally in the face of all of the children of Israel, in Moshe's face, in their faces, and it was a nasty situation. And so Pinchas did something quite dramatic. Well, let's back up just a bit and remember what the context is here. Israel had joined himself, says the third verse of this same chapter, to Baal of Peor. In other words, Israel was doing paganism writ large. And the anger of Yahuwah was kindled against Israel. So first thing he says to Moshe is, I want you to go out, get all the chiefs of these people, and hang them high. Literally, hang them up before Yahuwah in the face of the sun, so that the fierce anger of Yahuwah may turn away from Israel. So Moshe says, slay them all these folks who have joined themselves unto Baal Peor. Behold, one of the children of Israel came and brought a Midianitish woman in the sight of Moshe and in the sight of all the congregation. This is the incident that leads off the portion here. And they were, while they were weeping at the door of the tent of meeting, and they are literally going to go do the dirty pagan deed, worshiping this god with a sexual act right smack in front of everybody. So when Pinchas, son of Eleazar the priest, son of Aaron, he sees it, got up from the congregation, got himself a spear, went after the man into the chamber right there in front of the tent of meeting, and thrust both of them through with a spear, in one end, out the other. And it says, thus the plague was stayed from the B'nai Israel. Still, 24,000 people died as a result of this plague. So Pinchas saves who knows how many tens of thousands from the plague and turns away the fierce anger of Yahuwah. For this, he is given the covenant of shalom. And furthermore, there's more to it. It says, it'll be to him and to his seed after him the covenant of an everlasting priesthood, a Kohenimhood, because he was zealous for his Yah. Again, that word in Hebrew is kanah. Zealous or jealous, they're sometimes rendered either way, but he was willing to get up off his, as we would say sometimes now, blessed assurance and do something about the paganism, as opposed to, look around. He made atonement for the B'nai Israel. Now it tells us the name of the man who was slain, the man of Israel, with the Midianitish woman, his name was Zimri. He was the son of Salu, a prince of his father's house, among the Shimeonites. Now that's going to be important, I think. Can't prove this, but certainly there's scriptural evidence. We'll come to it, as it turns out, in just a couple minutes. So he is a prince and a high-ranking, well-thought-of individual among the men of the tribe of Simeon. The name of the Midianitish woman, she was Cozbi, daughter of Zur. Now, there's actually some people, some teachings that suggest Zur is none other than the same guy we saw in last week's portion, Balak. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. It's a different name, but it's not. Wouldn't be the only place in Scripture where somebody is referred to by a different name. And it is interesting because it all fits together with this idea of Balak and Bilaam and what was going on and how it is that Balak was so anxious to have these people cursed that was he willing literally to whore out his own daughter to the cause? Wouldn't be the first time, and I guess that would put him right in line there to be vice president of the United States or something. Anyway, he was head of the people of his father's house in Midian. So if it's not the king himself, it's another high-ranking individual that she comes from. So Yahuwah then speaks to Moshe, and he says, vex, harass, zaror, the Midianites, and smite them. Because they're harassing you by their wiles, wherewith they have beguiled you in the matter of Peor. In other words, they literally sent the women out to seduce the men into whoring themselves for Baal of Peor. And in the matter of Cozbi, daughter of Prince of Midian, their sister who was slain on the day of the plague in this matter of Peor. So it's a stunning story. I'll almost certainly talk about this a bit more tomorrow, because one of the things about this that kind of fascinates me is the idea of Phinehas getting up and doing something dramatic to stay a plague. Now I'm going to pause and think about it. Just let that sink in for a second. Somebody doing something in the sight of all Israel, or somebody doing something in the sight of a whole nation, for example, that is killing, well, not just tens of thousands of people, but in the case of America, in the land of bioweapon deployment, hundreds of thousands, millions of people. Something dramatic to stay the plague and turn away the anger of Yah for their paganism. Interesting, isn't it? Came to pass after the plague that Yahuwah spoke to Moshe and unto Eleazar, son of the priest, and he says, take yourselves a census, take the sum, and of course the Hebrew word here is literally lift up the head, sha'u et rosh, do a head count, of all of the Bnei Israel. Now this is not the first time, this is a second time now that we've seen this, from 20 years old and up, from their father's houses, all that are able to go to war in Israel. So he's literally asking for a repeat census of all of the people who were able to go to war. Moshe and Eleazar the priest spoke with him in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho, and they said, go out and do it. Take the sum of the people, 20 years old and up, as Yahuwah commanded Moshe and the Bnei Israel, that came forth out of the land of Mitzrayim. Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, the sons of Reuben, of Hanok, the family of the Hanokites, of Palu, the family of the Paluites, of Hezron, the family of the Hezronites, of Carmi, the family of the Carmites. So we're going to see, of the children of Reuben, and their names are all listed here, here are the families, and here are the number of them that were in fact counted, numbered. 43,730. And then we're going to get the sons of Palu, Eliab, Nemuel, Dathan, Abiram. These are Dathan and Abiram, the elect of the congregation, who strove against Moshe and against Aaron and the company of Korah when they strove against Yahuwah. Remember, the earth opened up her mouth, swallowed them up together with Korah. They all died. And the fire devoured 250 men. They became an oat, a sign. Notwithstanding, not all of the sons of Korah died. Some of them died not. Now, we're going to hear about all of the remaining tribes in here, and I'll go through at least a bit of these. I'll probably summarize some of it. As you know, one of the things that's done when these censuses are listed is we get a complete accounting, and a lot of the elements are almost word for word. They're not completely, of course, because the different families have different numbers of children and so forth. But it says the sons of Simeon. So here is number two, after their families. They're named individually. Nemuel, the Nemuelites, Yamin, the Yaminites, Yachin, and Zerah, and Shaul, the family of the Shaulites. These are the families of the Shimeonites, 22,200. Now, we could go back, and I'll scan back there just for a second, because what we're going to see is the numbers here are interesting. All of those that are able to go to war. And if you go back and compare, let's see, how many of the people of Simeon were there before? There were 59,300. 59,300. That's quite a bit less, isn't it? As a matter of fact, it's close to, many, many thousands different. More, even, than 24,000. Now, how many just died of the plague? 24,000. You add 24,000 to 22,000, and you get 46, 47,000. They're short more than that. So there's some others that have died for other reasons. We're not told. And we don't know for sure, but Rashi suggests that, you know what, sure looks like most of the people that died in this incident that we've just been talking about with Pinchas were, in fact, Shimeonites. And it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Because we're just told that this fellow Zimri is, in fact, a son of Shimon, the Simeonites. So it makes sense that there have been a lot of followers probably after him. And, the census here, among other things, helps to illustrate that. So again, it's not a proof text, but it certainly is an indicator because these numbers are down dramatically for at least one reason, and more than 24,000. Okay, we'll go through the rest of these rapidly. The sons of Gad, and their names of the sons, Zephon, Haggai, Shuni, Ozni, and Eri, Erod and Areli. So a lot of sons there. They were numbered 40,500. The sons of Judah, remember, and Onan died in the land of Canaan. Then there were some others, Shelah, Perez, we know these names, Zerah, and the sons of Perez, Hezron, the Hezronites, and Hamul. The total of the families of Judah were 76,500. From Issachar, you got Tola and Puvah, Jashub, Shimron. These are the families of Issachar, 64,300. Sons of Zebulun, and their total, 60,500. The sons of Joseph, after their families. Now, of course, remember, there's two main branches here, Manasseh and Ephraim. The sons of Manasseh, Machir, he begot Gilead of the Gileadites. Of Gilead, there's Eazer and Helek and Asriel and Shechem, the Shechemites. And of Shemitah, the family of the Shemitahites and Hefer. And remember, there's another, some daughters in here. Zelophehad, the son of Hefer. He had no sons, but he had lots of daughters. The names of the daughters of Zelophehad were Mala, Noah, Hogla, Milcah, and Tirzah. Those names appear several times in here. And then we say, here are the families of Manasseh, total. Those that were numbered, 52,700. Ephraim, the other branch of the sons of Joseph. There were sons there, Shuthela, Becher, Tahan, and Shuthela had a son, Eran. And of those of Ephraim that were numbered, 32,500. And then it says these are the sons of Joseph after their families. Then we go on to Benjamin, and he had sons, Bela, Ashbel, Ahiram, and Sephufam, the family of the Shufamites and Hufam. The sons of Bela, Ard and Naaman, and of the Ardites, there's some sons there too, Naaman. These are the sons of Benjamin and their families. They that were numbered here, 45,600. On to Dan and the Shuhamites, the total there, 64,400. On to Asher, his sons, Imnah, Ishvi, Beriah, and Beriah had sons, Heber and Malchiel, and he had a daughter. Daughter of Asher, whose name was Sarah. So the total of the families of the sons of Asher that were numbered, 53,400. Naphtali, Jeser, and Shelem. And the total of the families of Naphtali that were numbered were 45,400. So when you sum them all up, These are they that were numbered of the B'nai Israel. Remember now, the other number was 603,550. That's a number that you see so often that it's almost, hard not to commit to memory. This time around, though, 601,730. So 603,000 down to 601,000. What's interesting, of course, is you look and you see the family of Shimeon was hammered big time over these years. And obviously, since the total is only down a couple thousand, but we just saw 24,000 killed in the plague, you know that some of the other families have grown in the interim as well. And so there's a redistribution of the sizes. That's going to turn out to be important, because the next thing that Yah says, he speaks to Moshe, and he says, unto these the land shall be divided for an inheritance, according to the number of names. Number of names. So each of these individuals has a name. To the more you shall give the more inheritance, the fewer you shall give less. Each one according to the number of the names, that shall be the inheritance that it's given. Notwithstanding, going to still divide the land by lot. According to the names of the tribes of their fathers, they shall inherit. So, we're going to divvy up the parcels, basically, among the tribes, based on the size, the numbers of the names of the individual tribes, and using this census, this latest headcount. But, understand that they're still going to decide who gets which lots by lot. According to the lot shall their inheritance be divided between the more and the fewer. These are they that were numbered of the Levites after their families. Of Gershon, the Gershonites. Of Kohath, the Kohathites. Of Merari, these are the names of the families of Levi. The family of the Libnites, the Hebronites, the family of the Mahlites, the Mushites, and the Korahites. And Kohath begot Amram. And Amram had a wife. Her name was Jochebed. Is this starting to sound familiar? The daughter of Levi, who was born to Levi in Egypt, she bore unto Amram two fellows, we know the names, Aaron and Moshe, and a daughter, Miriam. And unto Aaron were born Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar and Ithamar. And you know what happened to Nadab and Abihu? They died because they offered strange fire before Yahuwah. And they that were numbered of them, of these the Levites, were 23,000. Every male from a month old and upward, not just 20, but down to a month old, because they were not numbered among the children of Israel, they do not get an inheritance among the B'nai Israel. And these are they that were numbered by Moshe and Eleazar the priests, who numbered the children of Israel in the plains of Moab by the Jordan, the Jordan, at Jericho. But, remember, there was a promise made to all of those people who followed and participated in that first democratic election in human history. You remember that two fellows, Joshua and Caleb, lost 10-2, but ultimately they won because they were on the right team. They were the only ones that survived out of the entire group of 603,550 that were above the age of 20. Because Yahuwah had said to them, "You shall surely die in the wilderness." So there was not left a man among them except those two, save Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. All right, we just talked about these girls, these women, and it says in the beginning of chapter 27, now they are going to draw near. The daughters of Zelophehad, son of Hefer, son of Gilead, son of Machir, son of Manasseh, of the families of Manasseh, son of Joseph, these are the names of his daughters, five daughters, Mahlah, Noah, Hoglah, Milcah, and Tirzah. So, they came, they stood before Moshe and before Eleazar the priest and before the princes and all of the congregation. Let's pause. We got a question? Casting lots, the same as casting. I'm not sure what that last word is. Poor? I don't know what that is. I don't understand the question. Casting lots is kind of like just, you know, it would be similar. I guess the modern equivalent would be like, and I'm sure there's a technique that I'm not familiar with as to how they actually do it. Probably wrote the names of the families down on stones or tablets or something, and then withdrew them one at a time as they looked at parcels and decided who was going to go where. So nowadays it would be kind of like putting people's names on a ping pong ball in a machine and seeing which ping pong ball came up or something. Okay, we're looking for lot 1207, and it is the family of Machir. Okay, your parcel is, you know, over there. In any case, here it is that the daughters of Zelophehad are coming. And so they got up in front of everybody and they said, our father died in the wilderness. He was not among the company that gathered themselves together against Yahuwah in the company of Korah. He wasn't part of the rebellion, but still he died in his own sin and he left no sons. So why should the name of our father be done away with from among his family? Because he left no male heir, no son. Give us a possession among our brethren and the brethren of our father. So Moshe brought their case before Yahuwah. And Yahuwah replied, and he said, the daughters of Zelophehad speak rightly. Surely you shall give them a possession, an inheritance among their father's brethren, and you shall cause that inheritance of their father to pass to them. And you shall speak to the Bnei Israel and tell them the following. If a man dies and he does not have a son, then you shall cause his inheritance to pass to his daughter. Now remember, folks, this is not necessarily, and this is kind of an interesting twist. I hadn't actually thought about it. I often don't mention it here, but I will this time around. There is something called the law of the levirate, right? Remember, we see it illustrated in the story of Ruth and Boaz. And there is another way, too, and that is that when brethren live together and a man dies leaving no son, then, in fact, the surviving brother can take that woman as his wife. This is the place where it's not only permitted, but strongly encouraged, if not simply commanded. And then the firstborn male child is, in fact, the heir, not of the brother that fathered it biologically, but of the dead brother that left no male heir. But in this case, if that doesn't happen, we have this situation where a man dies and he has no son, then you shall cause his inheritance to pass unto his daughter. If he doesn't have a daughter, then give his inheritance unto his brothers. If he doesn't have any brothers, then give his inheritance unto his father's brothers, their uncles, in other words. And if his father has, well, there's not any kids, there's not any, but if his father has no brethren, then you shall give his inheritance unto his nearest kinsman next to him in his family, and he shall possess it. And this shall be unto the Bnei Israel a statute, a chuk of judgment, as Yahuwah commanded Moshe. So there's a process and a problem here as a result of what the daughters of Zelophehad came up and illustrated. And there's a solution. Yahuwah then said to Moshe, get yourself up. Get thee up to this mountain of Abarim and take a look. Behold the land which I have given. Notice it's past tense again. I've already given this land to the Bnei Israel. Now when you've seen it, basically what he's saying, your time is up. When you've seen it, you too shall be gathered unto your people, just as Aaron your brother was gathered, because you rebelled against my commandment in the wilderness of Zin, Bamidbar Zin, in the strife of the congregation, to sanctify me at the water before their eyes. In other words, you failed to do what you were supposed to do. These are the waters of Meribah Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin, Bamidbar Zin. And Yahuwah then spoke to Moshe. Now this is the other way around. Moshe then speaks to Yahuwah, and he says, let Yahuwah, the Elohim of the spirit of all flesh, set a man over the congregation who may go out before them, who may come in before them, who may lead them out, who may bring them in, that the congregation of Yahuwah do not become like sheep which have no shepherd. So first thing he asks for is, what about who's going to take my place? Yahuwah then said to Moshe, you take Joshua, son of Nun, a man in whom is Ruach. And I like the way that this is phrased. In other words, it's not like I'll have to put my spirit in him. He already has Ruach. You lay your hand upon him. Set him before Eleazar the priest, before all the congregation. Give him a charge in their sight. And you shall put of your honor upon him that Kol Ha'edah, all of the congregation of Israel, of the children of Israel, may hearken, may Shema. And he shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who will inquire for him by the judgment of the Urim before Yahuwah. At his word they'll go out, and at his word they'll come in, both he and the Bnei Israel with him, even all of the congregation. Kol Ha'edah. So Moshe did as Yahuwah commanded. He took Joshua, set him before Eleazar the Kohen, and before all the congregation, laid hands on him, gave him a charge, as Yahuwah spoke by the hand of Moshe. Chapter 20 then continues. And now we're going to get some, I guess you'd say, more detail about the morning and the evening lambs and so forth. Command the children of Israel, say to them, my food, which is presented to me for offerings made by fire, of a sweet savor unto me, you shall observe to offer unto me in its due season. And you shall say unto them, this is the offering made by fire, the olah, which you shall bring unto Yahuwah. He lambs of the first year without blemish, two each and every day, day by day, for a continual burnt offering. One lamb you offer in the morning, the other lamb you shall offer at dusk. The morning and the evening lambs, you've heard these referred to. And a tenth part of an ephah of fine flour for a meal offering, mingled with a fourth part of a hin of beaten oil. This is to be continual. It's a continual burnt offering. It was offered in Mount Sinai for a sweet savor, an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. The drink offering goes with it. This shall be a fourth part of a hin for the first lamb. In the holy place, you pour out a drink offering of strong drink unto Yahuwah. The other lamb you present at dusk as a meal offering of the morning, and as the drink offering thereof you shall present it, an offering made by fire of a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. On the Sabbath day, then you're going to get two he lambs of the first year without blemish, two tenths part of an ephah of fine flour for the meal offering mingled with oil, and the drink offering. This is the burnt offering for every Sabbath. Now, notice, what's being outlined here is there's an additional offering on the Sabbath that's in addition to, besides, the continual burnt offering and the drink offering. On the new moons, at the Rosh Chodesh, you shall present a burnt offering to Yahuwah, two young bullocks, one ram, seven he lambs of the first year without blemish, three tenths parts of an ephah of fine flour for the meal offering, mingled with oil, for each of the bulls, two tenths part of fine flour, mingled with oil, for the one ram, and a several tenth part of fine flour mingled with oil for a meal offering for every lamb. For a burnt offering of a sweet savor, an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. Their drink offerings will be half a hin of wine for the bull, a third part of a hin for the ram, and a fourth part of a hin for the lamb. So the bigger meat gets a bigger drink offering, basically. A half, a third, and a fourth of a hin. This is the burnt offering of the new moon, Rosh Chodesh, throughout the months of the year. And one he-goat for a chatat, a sin offering to Yahuwah. This is offered in addition to, besides, the continual burnt offering and the drink offering that goes with that. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, is the Passover le-Yahuwah, Pesach le-Yahuwah. On the 15th day of this month, there'll be a feast. 7 days, you eat only unleavened bread. In the first day, a holy convocation, you shall do no manner of servile work, but you shall present the offering made by fire, a burnt offering unto Yahuwah. Two young bulls, one ram, seven he lambs of the first year, they shall be unto you without blemish. Their meal offering, fine flour mingled with oil, three tenths part for the bull, two tenths part for the ram, and a several tenths part for every lamb of the seven lambs. One he-goat for a chatat, sin offering to make atonement for you. These you offer in addition to, beside the burnt offering in the morning, which is continual. So it's we've been told it's continual, and when he says continual, he means it. So these other things are in addition to that, which is offered every single day. After this manner, you offer daily for 7 days the food of the offering made by fire, a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. It is offered besides the continual burnt offering and the drink offering. On the seventh day, you have another holy convocation. You shall do no manner of servile work. And also on the day of first fruits, when you bring a new meal offering unto Yahuwah in your feast of weeks, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no manner of servile work. So notice what we're hearing here is a recap or another reiteration, not only of the feasts of Yah. Remember, these some mistranslations say these are Jewish feasts. They're not, folks. Not that there's anything wrong with the fact that people who call themselves Jews continue to keep them. It's just that these are Yah's feasts. And it's demeaning when he says they're my feasts to change them and say, no, it's only for Jews. That is not what Scripture says. Let's not ever, ever make that mistake. And so we're getting the restatement of these various things here. This is the first fruits offering, no manner of servile work, burnt offering, and the same things that are listed besides the continual burnt offering, meal offering, all of these without blemish, and their drink offerings. Okay, so that's the spring feasts. Chapter 29 begins and says, in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, okay, now we're talking the fall feasts, right? You shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no manner of servile work. That's the consistent thing. In other words, no work for pay. Not the kind of thing that one would get paid for or have to pay for. This is a day of blowing the shofar unto you. You shall prepare a burnt offering for a sweet savor unto Yahuwah, one young bull, one ram, seven he lambs of the first year without blemish. Now, as I go through this, I'm going to make a couple observations. Being an engineer, I tend to kind of wax nerdy, and I always say, well, what's the pattern in here? And this one's interesting. Okay, their meal offering, fine flour mingled with oil, 3/10 part for the bull, 2/10 part for the ram, 1/10 for every lamb of the seven, one he-goat for a chatat, a sin offering to make atonement for you. And again, it tells us this is an addition to, besides, the olah, the burnt offering of the new moon. Because remember, this falls on a new moon by definition. It always falls on a new moon. So it's a special new moon. You do the regular new moon offering plus this one. The meal offering goes with that. The continual burnt offering and the meal offerings, their drink offerings, according to the ordinance, for a sweet savor, an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. Okay, so that's the first day of the fall feasts that starts on the new moon. Rosh Chodesh, in other words, Yom Teruah as well, day of the blowing of the shofar. On the 10th day of the 7th month, so 10 days later, you have a holy convocation. Here, we know this one, this is going to be called Yom Kippur, or Yom HaKippurim. You shall afflict your souls on this one, and do no manner of work. This is a complete prohibition of all work whatsoever. And you are to afflict your soul, be oppressed, humbled, bowed down. But you will present a burnt offering unto Yahuwah for a sweet savor. One young bull, one ram, seven he-lambs of the first year, they shall be unto you without blemish. Along with their meal offering, fine flour mingled with oil, 3/10 part for the bull, 2/10 for the ram, a several tenth part for every lamb of the seven lambs. A he-goat for a chatat, besides the regular sin offering of atonement, and the continual burnt offering, and the meal offering, and the drink offerings. Okay, so that's the 10th day, Yom Kippur. It doesn't actually tell us the name in this part, but we know that that's what it is. It's the Day of Coverings. On the 15th day of the month, so 5 days later of the 7th month, you shall have again a holy convocation. You shall do no manner of servile work. You keep a feast unto Yahuwah for 7 days. So this is, of course, the time that is generally referred to as Sukkot. Gathering in booths. This is the time when I think it's pretty clear Yeshua was born, probably on the first day of this particular feast. Anyway, it says, you shall present a burnt offering, an offering made by fire, a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. Now, this one is a lot more of the, a lot more animals. 13 young bulls, 2 rams, 14 he lambs of the first year, they shall be without blemish. Their meal offering, fine flour mingled with oil. Now, we've seen these ratios before. 3/10 part for every bull, 2/10 for each ram of both the rams, and a several tenths part for every lamb of, this time, 14 lambs. The one he-goat for a sin offering besides, right, besides all the regular offerings, the continual burnt offering, the meal offering, the drink offering. The second day, you present 12 young bulls, 2 rams, 14 he-lambs of the first year, without blemish. Meal offerings, drink offerings for the bulls, the rams, the lambs, according to their number, after the ordinance. One he-goat for a chatat, besides the continual burnt offering and the meal offering and their drink offerings. Now, I'll read one more, and we'll see the pattern here, I think. On the third day, 11 bulls, 2 rams, 14 he-lambs of the first year without blemish. Their meal offerings, their drink offerings for the bulls, the rams, the lambs, according to their number, after the ordinance. One he-goat for a chatat, besides the continual burnt offering, meal offerings, and drink offerings. Okay, fourth day, 10 bulls, 2 rams, 14 he-lambs. And again, a repetition, the meal offering, drink offerings for each of them, the he-goat for the chatat, and the continual offerings as every day. Fifth day, 9 bulls. We go to the sixth day, we're going to see we're down one more. And the sixth day, 8 bulls, 2 rams, 14 he-lambs. Notice that the number of rams and the he-lambs, they have not changed. The seventh day completes the pattern. On the seventh day, we're going to have 7 bulls, 2 rams, 14 he-lambs of the first year without blemish. Their meal offerings, their drink offerings for the rams, the lambs, according to their number. Now, at this point, I'll say, okay, it looks to me like what we're seeing here is a countdown. We start out with 14 bulls, and the number of days plus the number of bulls always adds up to 2 weeks, to 14. So as the number of days counts up, the number of bulls counts down, right? So we have days plus bulls equal 14, 2 times 7, and the number of he lambs stays at 2 times 7, 14. Is there significance to that? I have no doubt whatsoever that there is significance to that. And anytime we see multiples of numbers like 7, you can infer that that's the case. Now, the question is, what is the significance? And I'm going to suggest, several things come to mind. Obviously, 7 is one of the numbers of completion, and this is 2 times 7, so that ought to ring a bell. There are certainly elements of completion or 2 times completion that we should understand. Think about it. It's a fall feast. And the spring feast, if that was the first time around for the Mashiach, 2 times 7, the completion of the fall feast, the second pass, lots of pieces fall into place. You've heard me say, I blame Moshe. Does he have to do the comeback because Moshe struck the rock twice, 2 times completion? Again, I don't know the answer to any of these things. It's speculation. I think it's certainly interesting speculation. And one day we'll know. But in the meanwhile, just understand that these things are important. They're spelled out in a lot of detail here. It's obviously vital that we at least know and recognize it, even though we can't really do these things anymore. I think as we go through these feasts and at least memorialize them, it's important to remember what kinds of things were talked about in Scripture so that we can begin to see perhaps a little bit more of the picture. Okay. On the eighth day, you shall have a solemn assembly. You shall do no manner of servile work. But you shall present a burnt offering, an offering made by fire, an olah, a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. Notice the big change. So we have the 7 days of the Feast of Sukkot, the time of remembering and regathering and being in booths and a simulation of the wedding feast, a picture of things to come, all of that. And then we get to the eighth day, a holy convocation, a solemn assembly. You shall do no manner of servile work. The burnt offering is a sweet savor, one bull, one ram, 7 he lambs of the first year without blemish. Their meal offering, their drink offerings for the bull, the ram, and the lambs shall be according to their number after the ordinance. So we've already seen this. It's been repeated. 1 he-goat for a chatat, that's consistent, besides the continual burnt offering and the meal offerings and the drink offerings, that too is extremely consistent. And it says this. This is literally wrapping up the parsha. And arguably, this, if you think about it, it wraps up a prophetic pattern from his Moedim, his appointed times. And arguably, I believe strongly, I think it's about as clear as it could get, the likely return time of the Mashiach during the fall feasts. We don't know when, but we do know one interesting thing, that it begins, the countdown begins on this day that no man knows the hour or the day. Why? Because it comes at the new moon. We don't know it until it's sighted. And until there's two witnesses, you ain't sighted it. And he knows where the two witnesses are. No one else does, and when that will be. But here is the climax of the whole thing. These you shall offer unto Yahuwah in your appointed seasons, besides your vows and your free will offerings, whether they're your burnt offerings or your meal offerings or your drink offerings or your shalamim or your peace offerings. So those other things, we continued, as long as there was a place to do them at least, they were done. Can't do them now. Can't do them physically. We can certainly make offerings, the bulls of our lips, and we can offer a lot of things in that respect. But we can't do them physically. We don't have a physical place anymore. But we can memorialize them. We should memorialize them. Chapter 30, the portion ends with the last verse, and it says, this makes incredible sense, Moshe told the B'nai Israel according to all that Yahuwah commanded Moshe. So, he was told, he passed it along, and here's the interesting thing, folks. Thousands of years later, we still have the written commandments according to all that Yahuwah commanded Moshe.